Welcome to this week's edition of Radioactive Magazine on KKFI 90.1 FM, Kansas City Community Radio, with this week's host, Dave Mitchell. We will be talking about our COVID-19 pandemic with two health officials from Johnson and Wyandotte counties in Kansas. However, we need a framing introductory statement first, providing an outline of basic information, along with a few conclusions, observations, and an analogy, which are entirely my own. The COVID-19 pandemic has been and continues to be a collective trauma for the human race, with over 14.4 million cases globally and over 600,000 deaths as of July 19th. The U.S. has a significant share of this trauma, facing a highly contagious COVID-19 virus that, in some circles, has been seriously underestimated. On April 30, Johns Hopkins University reported U.S. COVID-19 cases at 215,000, with over 5,100 fatalities. Despite a national lockdown for a time, along with yeoman's work on the part of a wide array of leaders, healthcare workers, and cooperation by a majority of our citizens to recommended health guidelines, as of July 20, we now have greater than 3.7 million cases with over 140,000 deaths. There is a very good possibility we will suffer 200,000 deaths by late fall unless this surge is broken. On July 14, the KC Star published a map indicating Kansas was one of 18 states with uncontrolled community spread, and Missouri was one of 12 states trending poorly. Since engaging in a partial or full reopening of our 5-county metro area with restrictions, there has been a disturbing increase in the 7-day rolling average of COVID-19 cases for our metro. In early July, the KC Star reported that the 7-day rolling average of daily cases as 155. As of July 15, this average had doubled to about 320 per day. On July 19, 485 new cases were reported, a record. This interview is being recorded on July 21st, and by the airing date of July 28, these numbers will no doubt have increased. As of July 19, our 5-county metro area has a total of almost 14,000 cases with 287 deaths. We have all suffered some level of trauma, ranging from the loss of jobs or income, the upending of our work and social relationships, the loss of loved ones, and more. We are in a kind of collective nervous breakdown, due in no small part to our inadequate response to what faces us. Some things are beyond our control, but as individual citizens, our behaviors collectively can make a world of difference. There is no guarantee our metro will not become the next coronavirus hotspot. To resolve our collective nervous breakdown, there is only one way forward: strong and consistent following of the simple health guidelines we all know on nearly a universal basis. This includes the wearing of face masks. To aid us in our exploration of this critical subject, we have with us today Dr. Sandy Areola, PhD, who is the director of the Health and Environment Department in Johnson County and is leading the effort to mitigate COVID-19 in his county. We also have with us Elizabeth Groenweg, who joins us, and she is the chief epidemiologist with the Unified Government Public Health Department of Wyandotte County. Elizabeth and Dr. Areola, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dave. Good morning. Thanks for having me, and thank you for your interest in the health of our citizens.
Thank you. I was just saying thank you for having me on the show and helping to get us information out to the public. We appreciate that.
Let's just go right to the questions. Each of your respective counties are seeing a significant spike in COVID-19 cases. In the last week, Johnson County had 800 additional cases, bringing the total to just over 3,700. And Wyandotte County had an increase of 600 in 1 week. The entire metro area has had an increase just over 2,400 in 1 week. Let's talk about how contagious COVID-19 is. In the words of Dr. Fauci in a June 10 Guardian article, he said COVID-19 is spectacularly efficient in spreading from human to human and has a high degree, relatively speaking, of morbidity and mortality. Can each of you talk about the primary ways that COVID-19 spreads, including a comment on contagiousness from surfaces?
Thank you, Dave. I'll start. I think you give the right numbers. We are just under 15 million people infected worldwide. It's a virus unlike any that we have seen in the past. It's one where by simply talking, singing, talking to people, you can infect them. There's no question that even though the what we call the infection fatality rate slightly higher than that of the seasonal flu, but really lower than Ebola and other more contagious diseases, but because of the infectiousness, the ability to be passed from one person to another, it really is causing a lot of harm. It is no question very, very efficient in being transmitted from one person to another. But in the past 4 months, we have learned quite a bit about this virus. We've learned enough to understand that still the primary route or medium of transmission is respiratory. So if we absolutely wear masks and protect our respiratory system, we would really do a good job of curtailing the spread of the virus. The CDC director came out last week basically saying, if all of us will wear masks for 4 weeks, we'll have control over this virus. So yes, it does linger on surfaces, and we need to maintain good hand hygiene, but still the protecting what we call the T-zone, eye, nose, and mouth, is still the biggest route that we have to pay attention to. Now we're having a lot more of our people wear masks. We're having more businesses that are requiring people to wear masks. And the higher the percentage of our population that are wearing masks, the quicker we can contain the spread of this virus. Yes, it's very concerning that a few weeks ago in Johnson County, we were at about 14 cases a day. Then we jumped to 29, which is over 100% increase, and then to 45, and then to 80 cases a day, and over 100 cases a day. That is a huge spike. It's an infection rate that we cannot sustain. We have to find a way to break the transmission cycle. And by far, short of shutting things down, the best tool that's available to us right now is for people to wear a mask, stay home if you're sick, wash your hands properly, keep your physical distance. Again, as a sense of responsibility, not just to yourself and to the community, to avoid crowded events. This is not a time to have house parties. Those are places where we know that infection is, transmission is pretty high.
Right, right. Elizabeth, you want to expand on Dr. Ariola's comments?
Sure. So, you know, as Dr. Ariola mentioned, this is a respiratory virus. So it's primarily spread through respiratory droplet. And a common misconception that I see among the general public is that, you know, I'm wearing a mask to protect myself, when really the reason that we're asking people to wear masks is because by you wearing a mask, you're protecting the people around you. And when the people around you are wearing a mask, they're protecting you. So that's why it's so important that we have community-wide mask wearing so that everyone is protected in the community. Because really, you wearing a mask is not going to do as good of a job protecting you as if you're surrounded by people that are wearing a mask. And also in regard to, you know, how contagious and how easily spread COVID is, it's kind of hit a sweet spot in terms of viruses. So the ultimate goal of a virus is to reproduce and to spread. That's kind of what a virus's end game is. And so COVID has hit this sweet spot where it's not like super deadly, like something like Ebola, where it's going to kill off all of its hosts before it's able to really spread in the community. But it's also, you know, relatively contagious and spreads more easily than the flu. So it spreads pretty rapidly in the community. So it's kind of hit that sweet spot in terms of viruses, and that's why it's taken such a toll worldwide.
I saw a letter to the editor in the Star where this gentleman had the mistaken idea that masks did no good because the virus was so small. But the key point, as I understand it, on a mask is that the mask prevents the droplets that come out of your mouth when you speak or laugh or.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So what's being spread, how the virus is being spread, is through what we call respiratory droplets. So like, you know, droplets that come out of a person's mouth when they're talking or sneezing or coughing or out of their nose, that kind of thing. And so it's not really, you know, the viruses are very, very small, but the respiratory droplets are large enough that by just having a covering over your nose and mouth, those respiratory droplets are going to be contained and not really as easily spread to other people.
What about being outside? I wear a mask when I go into a business. I mean, I put it on before I go in. And but being outside, I personally have not felt the need to wear a mask outside. Is that okay?
You know, it really depends on if you can guarantee a 6 foot, you know, or more distance between people when you're going to be outside. You know, for example, I went shopping the other weekend at the Legends. And yes, you're outside of the Legends, but you're also crowded with other people. So obviously you would want to wear a mask because there's no way to maintain social distance of at least 6 feet when you're out walking in a crowded outdoor shopping area.
Well, you know, I think, what about surfaces? I mean, I personally get a little paranoid about my groceries when I bring them home. Is that a justified paranoia or not?
Sami here, and I know that there are quite a few conversations around the virus on surfaces, on books, on groceries, and I clearly would not discourage anything that we do out of abundance of caution. But again, the risk of transmission through those routes are pretty low. Now, if you choose to wash your hands, some people choose to wash their groceries or put it and have a method of bringing it in, all those are okay. Still, the most significant route of exposure is respiratory.
You know, I think, you know, one of the issues I think that is a problem is that there's the general attitude that COVID-19 is no worse than the flu, especially among the young. And the U.S. fatality rate is 4% of identified cases, and the fatality rate in those who are in their 20s and 30s is quite low. There's increasing information coming out that there's many symptoms related to COVID-19 infection that are long-term. What makes COVID-19 long-term effects so concerning?
Sami here, I think it's a faulty, very faulty narrative that you either die or you're fine. That's not what we are saying. There's a wide range of adverse consequences, some lingering effects post quote-unquote recovery or recovered that people are reporting. And so that and it is true that a lot of the adverse consequences are probably more pronounced and more likely to be seen in the older population, but we are seeing them in the younger population. We are seeing them in 20-year-olds. We're seeing them in children younger than 10. They are there. Now they don't have pre-existing conditions. And so you can make an argument for us in Johnson County, a lot of the increase in cases, we are seeing them in younger people, 20 to 29 year old, 30 to 39 year old. You can make a case that you're not likely to see high mortality in those populations, which is again, making a distinction between what we call a case fatality rate, infection fatality rate, and mortality, is that in this population will probably likely drive down the case fatality rate because they will have adverse consequences, but because they don't have underlying conditions, they are less susceptible to a mortality like we see in the older population. However, it does happen in that population, and people need to keep that in mind. We have seen people that are out of inpatient hospitalization and for weeks and months have lingering effect. Recently, we have one of our residents in Johnson County who is a fire department guy who was on TV talking about his experiences and how some of those effects still linger on. So we need to make sure that we correct those narratives, that it's not just, it's either you are fine or have sniffles, or that you die. It's a wider range of reported health consequences that people suffer in there. Again, we also have the comparison to flu, seasonal flu all the time. Quite a few differences. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, if you look at their estimate of what is called fatality rate, infection fatality rate in this regard, is 0.1% for seasonal influenza, is 0.6% for COVID-19. So that's a big difference between those two, in addition to the fact that we actually do have vaccine for seasonal flu and for Ebola and other things that might happen, we don't have for this one. And so the construct of getting immunity or enough percentage of our population to help us in breaking the transmission cycle just doesn't exist for this new virus yet.
Elizabeth, do you want to expand on Dr. Ariola's comments?
Sure. So I definitely agree with him about, you know, there's this really inaccurate narrative about either you get COVID and it's just a mild cold or you die. There's a whole lot of other things in between those two ends of the spectrum. You know, for people that end up intubated and on a ventilator because they've gotten COVID, the average amount of time that they're on the ventilator is about 21 days. And 21 days on a ventilator, in bed, not breathing on your own, not eating on your own, that takes a toll on the body. It's not easy to recover after 21 days on the ventilator. That's pretty serious. And, you know, COVID's a new virus. We're still learning more as we go. You might have seen in the news reports about a condition called MIS, or multisystem inflammatory syndrome, which is a condition that we've seen in children that are diagnosed with COVID, where it causes, inflammation all over the body and inflammation in crucial organs like the heart and the kidneys and the liver, and can be a very serious condition and even lead to death. And we don't really know why this MIS condition is developing in some children diagnosed with COVID. There's also evidence now that COVID can increase risk for blood clots, which can cause things like stroke, pulmonary embolism, and even limb loss or limb amputation. So all of these things are things that we've just learned about COVID within the last few months. And I think that as we continue on in this pandemic, we're going to continue to learn more about COVID and some of the serious health consequences long-term that might develop from it.
You know, my understanding is that it's not just people who've been intubated, but people can just suffer very long-term effects. Brain fog, I've seen mentioned more than once, where that just lingers on and on. difficulty concentrating, extreme fatigue is another that just lingers on and on that I've seen. My understanding is that there's as many systems in the body that can be affected for long periods of time from relatively mild cases.
Can I jump in and ask a quick question? I have often wondered whether the different symptoms that people have from asymptomatic to death has to do with the number of viruses, the strain of viruses, or the host, or a combination of all three.
I would say that, like Elizabeth said, there's a lot about the virus that we don't know. However, we will tell you that we know that there's what we call dose dependence. So where it's just been exposed to a tiny amount in a few minutes may not really elicit a response that you will see, or even cause you to test positive for the virus. Whether the level of exposure or a level of the amount of viral particles that you have, or what we call viremia, impact the kind of response that you see, that's something that we will need to learn about. But there's no question that there are age-dependent effects, whether in the development of the symptoms or in the severity of the symptoms. No question about that, that underlying conditions are major factors in how this is expressed and the severity. There's a lot to be learned about the virus, and we're learning as we go. But if you have underlying conditions, if you are in the older age category, you are more susceptible to the more serious impact of this virus.
Let's talk about, we have a minute left here, let's talk about exponential growth. You know, the Metro has had 2,400 new cases in 1 week, over 2,400. How concerning is that? Exponential growth, something I don't think people really understand. Can you talk about that and the how dangerous 2,400 in 1 week is for a Metro?
2,400 in a week is a lot. We have to find a way to break the transmission cycle. So there's a technical term that we use, what we call effective reproduction number, which is really a measure of if how many people an infected person will infect. And so if it's the higher it is, the more problematic it is. We want to keep that below one. So the way to look at it, if the effective reproductive number is two, it means that one person will infect two people. Actually, let's just use 1.5. So you start with 100 cases, that would turn into 150 people being infected. Those 150 will, at 1.5, will turn into 225 infections, and 338 and 438. So you could quadruple that within a period of three infection cycles. And so, and that's why wearing masks, staying at home if you're sick, the efforts that public health do in terms of case investigation and contact tracing are very, very important. Ultimately, having a vaccine will help. Having some measure of population immunity because some people have been infected will help. And so we do have to break that cycle. If you don't find a way to reduce the number of people that are a case infect, then we're going to be in trouble. Keep in mind that Centers for Disease Control and Prevention came out saying that for every one case that we detect, there are 10 that we missed, whether we didn't test them or they are asymptomatic or we don't have enough sampling supply. So having that many cases is very troubling to us in public health.
Okay. So if there were 2,400 identified cases last week, that means that there's potentially 24,000 in the last week that we did not catch. Is that correct?
According to the CDC, for every one case that we see, there are 10 that we miss. So that would be accurate. Yeah.
That's an amazing statistic and a scary one. Elizabeth, can you sort of wrap this up for us here? Any comments?
Yeah, I think that in addition to kind of the exponential growth that we talked about and that Dr. Areola described, What makes it so challenging right now to control COVID as well, coming from someone that's kind of in the middle of all the contact tracing and leading contact tracing efforts in Wyandotte County, is that, you know, think about how many different contacts one person has during their infectious period. You know, maybe they're going to work, they're going to the gym, they're going to the grocery store, they're hanging out with friends, they're going to a party, you know, all of these different contacts. And so that's how you see kind of these explosions like we're seeing here in Johnson County and Wyandotte County. You know, one person going to all these different places while infectious, maybe even not knowing they're infectious yet because they haven't developed symptoms yet. You know, that's why we're seeing this rapid increase in the number of cases and why it's so challenging for public health to control. And so that's why we're asking the public to do everything they can to help us, because public health really has a challenge right now. It's a very challenging time to be an epidemiologist and try to control COVID. So we're asking the community to please do their part. Wear a mask if you're going to be out in public. You know, don't hang out in large groups and crowds. Now is not the time to have a party, as Dr. Areola mentioned earlier. Stay home if you can. All of those things that really we've been telling people for a while now are just so important now that we're seeing a surge in cases.
Those are very good points. And so the moral of the story here is to limit your contacts as much as possible. And wear a face mask and do all the other things that we know we need to do. And I'm sorry, we have run out of time. I wish we could have talked much longer. But Dr. Areola and Elizabeth, thank you so much for being on the show today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, bye.